So sometime I want to know if you have any good Raven stories.
Well, Ralph and Gladys, of course.
Ralph and Gladys?
Well, those were the two that...
In Phantom Ranch?
In Phantom Ranch, yeah.
Okay, well, wait, let me just say the date here before he goes into this. Today is November the 11th, 2021. I'm here with Don Lago and Keith and Nancy Green. And Don has just asked a question about ravens.
Yeah, a raven story from Phantom Ranch.
Well, yeah. Roy Starkey, who was kind of the maintenance guy down there, although he was a really nice guy, and everybody really loved him, but he wasn't very good at maintenance, or you know, he was kind of forgetful, and so you know, he spent all his time looking for stuff, it seems like. But that's all right. So did I. So, but he was one of the things that Roy liked to do was right after breakfast. You know, we had for breakfast we served pancakes and eggs, and bacon, and. But after, you know, how that worked is we'd get everybody's, well, first we'd put a plate of pancakes, two plates of pancakes on each table, and then we'd let the visitors come in and they'd start eating the pancakes and eggs and stuff, and then after, you know, as they used them up, the waiter then would go back into the kitchen and get more plates, which the cook was busily assembling, more plates of pancakes. So it was all you could eat, pancakes and eggs and bacon. So anyway, after it was all over, and you know, the last of the visitors had, you know, reluctantly strapped on their backpacks and headed for the rim. After it was over, you'd have, you know, plates of pancakes in the. You know, on the tables, you know, with, you know, one or two pancakes left, and Roy would go around and collect them all, and then he'd take all the pancakes out to the back behind the back where the incinerator was. The incinerator is what we used to burn all paper products. And we do that every morning. The lodge person is one of his jobs, but Roy would kind of get ahead of that and get out there and get the pancakes lit. And somebody had to stay out there, of course, to make sure you didn't start a fire or something. But Roy would go out there with his plate of pancakes, and he'd feed them to Ralph and Gladys, is what he'd named, a male and a female raven, who would hang out there when the incinerator started running. They'd come and hang out, and Roy would put all these. Put these pancakes down on the riprap, the wire mesh sort of stuff that holds the bank of the Bright Angel Creek up. He would, you know, put the pancakes down on that, and Ralph and Gladys would have pancakes. But I remember, I think I told this story once already, but I remember one time hiking down the the trail, and for some reason I was on the river trail, and a raven flew by with a pancake in his mouth. So I knew it was either Ralph or Gladys.
Oh, that's
so
great.
Why were they named Ralph and Gladys? Shouldn't it have been Heckle and Jekyll or something like that?
I don't know. Well,
he named him the guy who was feeding him.
Yeah. But that's not logical. There must be a reason for that.
Wasn't
all that logical.
Was Roy down there like in the early days or later?
Yeah, Roy is a kind of a fun story. He first was down there, I believe. Like, this was always a question, and we weren't ever really sure, but it was sometime in the 60s when he got hired by the U.S. Geological Survey to measure the river.
Okay.
And he had the thing that crosses the measuring cage sort of thing that is right next to the Black Bridge right now, wasn't there. And there's one further, there's a cable further down, or further upriver. If you went, what you had to do to get there would be, you'd climb, you'd get up to the north side of the Kaibab Suspension Bridge, and step over the rock wall that the bridge. When you get off the bridge, the rock wall makes you turn to the left and go toward Phantom Ranch. But if you, instead of going to the left, if you step over that or climb over that rock wall, there's a trail there. Not very much of a trail, but a trail. And it starts with a part where it's probably 20 feet straight down off the edge of the trail. It's kind of an exciting trail. But that trail, if you follow it, it zigzagged in and out the, you know, various little drainages and stuff for maybe half a mile, and it came to this cable car, and the cable car was just a wooden box, basically, with you know, heavy wood, but wood anyway, and it was connected to, and it was hanging from a cable that crossed the river there. And and I got to ride in it one time, ride across with Roy. We went across the river, but what he would do is he'd get in that cable car, and it was. It had a hook on it, and on the north side of it, and the hook was hooked into a ring that was cemented into the wall of the canyon. And so he'd have to pull on the ring so that he could unhook the hook. And once he unhooked the hook, then he just let go. And the box was had these what would you call them
like a roller or something like
that? pulleys that were hanging from the cable. Yeah, one on the front, one on the back of the cable car. The cable car was about maybe 6 feet long or 5 feet long. And there was a seat on both sides of it, and both ends of it, I mean. So you sat on either the north end or the south end. And he'd be sitting on the north end, of course, in order to unhook it. He'd unhook it, and it would then, the you know, by gravity, it would roll down the cable that went across the river and get going pretty quick, pretty fast, and then it starts, goes up the, you know, the other side of the cable, constantly going slower and slower and slower. And there was a tool that was hooked, that was actually kind of built around the cable, that had a handle on it, kind of like a wrench, like a what would you call it? Like a plumber's wrench. And as soon as the cable started, the cable car was going too, you know, started going, was going pretty slowly, you'd want to, you know, take advantage of the momentum and push the cable, the wrench thing, the tool, let's call it, push the tool forward, and then as you pulled it back, it crimped the cable, so it grabbed the cable. As you pulled it back, then you could pull it then up over your shoulder and keep the momentum going, because you had to get the cable car all the way to the other end of the cable on the south side of the river. And once you got it there, then it took some finagling, but he could get it hooked on a hook on the south side of the river, and then climb out of the cable car, and there were, and it may still be, last I saw it, there was still there, but there was a couple of little sheds that had all of his tools in it, and he'd get all of his tools together and then go back across the river slowly, a little bit at a time, and then drop these tools by the tools were also on pieces of cable or wire. He'd drop them down into the river and then measure at different depths the temperature and the speed. And he even took samples of the river at different elevations. I never got to do this with him, so I don't know how exactly that all worked, but anyway, he'd end up with a log that showed how deep the river was at any, and it did this once a day or twice a day.
That was his main job initially, was doing that?
Yeah.
And then he moved into maintenance eventually?
Well, what happened with Roy was eventually, in the late 60s or early 70s, I'm not sure when, because before I was down there, but they built the instrument that's right next to the Black Bridge, that basically has a is a what do you call it, a tube, a column that drop, that goes into the north side of the river down to the bottom of the river, and that instrument would automatically take readings of how deep the river was and salinity and probably who knows what else. It was taking, it would take all that stuff, and then it had an antenna in it. And at a certain time, every week, it would broadcast all of the data that it collected that week to a satellite. And the satellite then would relay that message to the main USGS office in Ruston, Virginia.
That's interesting. Did you know that?
The basics, yeah.
That is really cool.
So when they put that in, of course, that meant Roy didn't have a job anymore.
Yeah.
But he, you know, everybody had kind of gotten to know him and stuff. And he was, you know, a good friend of us all and of everybody. And so it was when Terry Mache was the manager, so in the late 70s. And she hired him to be the maintenance person down there so he could stay down there.
That equipment that you just described, mm-hmm. how does it get itself into the water, or is it always in the water?
It's always in the water.
Okay,
it's like a, I don't know, probably cement column wish I could think of the words there. A cement.
But it has some kind of an instrument that's doing.
That went
down
into the water, and it had openings on it so the water could get into it.
Do you know if it's still what they're using?
I think so, yeah.
Do you know, Don, too?
I guess, you know, at least Sherry, I occasionally have seen the USGS guys doing the little trolley thing and dropping a little something into the river.
Because, you know, now with this whole thing with the water evaporating, the Colorado River water is a big topic now. So you'd think that they would have really high-tech measuring things. If it's either the same thing or some updated version of it.
Well, I'm sure they can measure the depth of the river with that. But
well, the temperature would change, too, as the depth mm-hmm. changes.
Sure.
So did Roy ever get in trouble for feeding the ravens? I mean, that's feeding the wildlife in the national park.
Right? Hadn't thought of that.
No?
No. So none of the rangers gave him a little scolding for that?
No. No, they kind of, you know, thought it was a cute thing, actually.
Okay.
So, no, they didn't seem to care at all. I mean, they had bigger things to worry about, of course, than that.
Well, that guy eventually, I think I remember from when we talked about Roy before, he eventually kind of mentally lost it, right? And
Well, first of all, let me mention, because this is an important landmark, that right under the place where, just before you get to where the cable car was on that trail, there's another trail that goes down, switchbacks down, and it gets to a little beach. It's not much of a beach, but a little beach right next to the river. And the river is, you know, it gets pretty deep there. It's pretty deep anywhere, but it's pretty deep there. So anyway, that was called Roy's Beach, and because it was right under his cable car. And he would often, Roy was a nudist, and he just loved to take his clothes off and jump in the water. And I believe that even in the very beginning of the time he was with his USGS, after he finished taking those temperatures and stuff. And it was hard work, and it was sunny, you know, it was Fana Ranch, so 110 degrees sort of stuff. And he'd go down to that place and take his clothes off and jump in the water. Ice cold Colorado, you know, 45 degrees. And then, of course, you have to get out almost immediately. And then he'd just lay on the beach until he dried off and put his clothes back on and come back.
And would a river trip go by that beach?
Yeah.
It would.
I think I think it's even in Larry Stevens' River Guide.
Oh, really?
I think it used to be. You know, it is Roy's Beach. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's official.
Yeah, and he had, and she, it's a female, right, that wrote that?
What, Larry Stevens?
No, it's not Larry Stevens.
Maybe somebody else.
The one that has mile for mile, the river, or...
Well, there's a couple of guides. Maybe three.
Anyway, yeah, I don't know about Larry Stevens' version of it, but the one I'm thinking of, I should find out what her name is. We've got that book somewhere. Anyway, she tells the story, which was the one that the river folks had, because it's basically about the river, so. But the river folks.
Is this Sadler? Krista Sadler?
Krista Sadler.
Oh. Yeah.
No,
it wasn't Krista. She did do a book of stories all done by, I mean, that she put it in one book, but it was their stories.
This is the river mile for mile. It used to be a book that river guides would use.
That's mainly Larry Stevens, although there's another one called the Belknap Guide.
Yeah, I'm thinking of the Belknap. Yeah. I don't know if Roy's Beach is in that or not.
So did Roy get arrested for...
The story that they had been telling was this crazy story about him drinking coffee and shaking and getting the shakes and then getting catatonic, like with his arms just sort of out of him, couldn't move him. And they had to take him out and put him in a helicopter. And that's how he left Phantom Ranch.
That was the end.
That's their story, but it is not true. Not at all true. He was slowly losing it. I mean, I admit that. But he was still knew where he was and what he was doing. And he wasn't insane by any way. Basically, the last time he was down there, I brought him down. He was just hanging out on the rim. Brad
Dimmick?
No. Yeah. Brad Jones. Oh. Brad Jones was had somehow gotten this contract with a river equipment store in Flagstaff. Gosh, I wish I could still remember all these details. And anyway, the train station was not being used at the time. And so the train station became a store for river guide stuff. River stuff. Or for hiking stuff, really.
What about year would this be?
This would be in 19... probably... 70s or 80s. It might be 70s and 80s.
But it was before the Grand Canyon Railroad.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly when that started. You might, Don, because you're the history guy.
The Grand Canyon Railroad, like about 1990 or so.
So that would be, this is right then, either 70s or 80s.
Are you talking about the station in Williams?
No,
here in Flagstaff. Okay.
No, in the Grand Canyon.
The Grand Canyon.
The South Side.
Yeah,
oh.
He's talking about that station was used as a river guide.
Right.
River stuff store.
Grand Canyon.
See, yeah, because then they went, now that the train actually stops at the station, right?
So we're talking about the South Rim train station?
Yeah, right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did not know that.
Yeah, so... do you remember at the very end of his tenure when you brought him down the trail? That was like the late 70s, you think, or early 80s?
Yeah, I think that would be Yeah, that would be in the early 80s, I guess. And anyway, he came down and he hiked down, but they had to give him some shoes at Brad and Bob Topping. Is that name ring a bell with you?
I'm not sure.
Bob Topping was a character that was hanging around the South Rim at the time, and what they did is they found some shoes that were for sale actually at this trail in Grand Canyon Trail Guides place, and there's some for sale, and they just took them out of the box and gave them to Roy to put on to go down, to hike down. And so we hiked down, and his feet were really bothering him, and it really hurt him.
Aww.
And we eventually looked at his shoes, and they didn't match.
Two
different shoes.
That's not a good strategy.
Poor guy. And does anybody know, like, what eventually happened to him?
So let me finish the story. He came down with me, and he hung out for a while. I mean, he was not a maintenance person anymore. He was just there, you know, at the bottom of the canyon and his favorite haunts. And but he got bored with being that, and I remember him sitting on a stump kind of down by the, actually where the sewage, where that area is, you know, south of the Phantom Ranger Station and north of the corral. Anyway, I remember sitting on a rock, just, you know, feeling kind of dejected like this, like, how am I going to get out of here? Because he knew he couldn't hike out.
Oh, and, so sad.
And eventually, the Park Service was able to arrange a helicopter that was going out anyway, and they flew him out.
Okay.
And that was the last thing anybody
ever
saw.
That's sad.
Well, pretty much.
Yeah.
How old
was he, do you think, at that point?
You know, it seemed like he was older than dirt at the time, but now that I'm older than dirt, I'm thinking he was maybe in his 50s.
Not even that old.
Yeah. Maybe in his 50s, maybe even in his 60s. But no, look, I think it was in his 50s.
Wow. It'd be interesting to know what happened to him eventually.
I went to, me and the Tobins, Dan and Terry Tobin, who had been employees at Phantom Ranch, we went to Phoenix one time because he had a sister in Phoenix who was constantly trying to get him to leave Phantom Ranch and check into an old folks home like this one.
Yeah.
But down in Phoenix, and they got, because he was definitely losing his memory. You know, and
seems kind of young though, in his 50s, unless he had early onset Alzheimer's, which is possible.
It could be.
Yeah.
It could be. I don't know. You know, at the time, we were all in our 20s and 30s.
So he seemed ancient.
He just seemed, yeah. You know, he was just old.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to ask, did you guys get to know, like, I mean, I moved to Flag in 84, 85, and Mike Yard and them were working for doing fish studies. And I wondered, and then what, Richard Quarterly or whatever it was, he eventually ended up, I mean, he worked for USGS, right?
Yeah, and then NAU.
And
course.
He became a librarian, yes, eventually, yeah.
Well, he was a river guide for a
And time. A river guide. So I wondered if Nancy and Keith knew any of those people who did studies. And
definitely. God, what were their names? His names again.
Get you right here.
Is Nancy still here?
Yeah, she's here.
Nancy, who was the... Who's the river guy we went with that he, broke his ankle on? And
Howie
Fisher.
Usher. Howie Usher.
Yeah, he was one of them.
He worked for USGS or just as a river guide?
USGS.
Okay.
He worked on that. He was basically stationed at the Phantom Ranger Station, and him and now he lives in See, I'm losing my mind too, so.
Well, it's hard to remember everybody's name. I just knew Yard because of Steve's store. They would come in to the store, and Richard. And Howie Usher, of course, we knew.
Okay.
And Howie ended up having a stroke, right? Yes. Eventually, yeah. He had a stroke, and after he was a teacher. He was teaching down in Clarkdale after he got off the river. Yeah, you probably knew that. And he married a girl who was a professor of history or something. But, yeah.
Him and...
Who else worked?
He had his friend was with him all the time.
Wasn't Durker.
Too. No, it wasn't. It was...
I know more of the USGS astrogeology people. It'll come to you. Yeah, so I just wondered if those guys, you see them with their little study boats on the river when you're down there, pulled into coves, doing whatever it is they do with fish, that how much time they hung out at Phantom Ranch or...
Well, they were doing a study on humpback chubs, but they were hiking up and down the Bright Angel Creek.
They lived, most of them, in Flagstaff?
Yeah, but they, have several weeks at Grand Canyon and down at the bottom of the canyon and go up and up and down the creek making measurements. Measuring its depth and its temperature and that sort of thing, and just for information about Bright Angel Creek.
Do you know, Don, is USGS still really involved with the canyon studies?
I mean, water, as you said, is a hot topic, and they're very involved in water resources.
Okay.
Just measuring what's there and the. The solidity of it, or the sediment in it, and
all that.
Yeah, they're still very involved in that.
Yeah. Well, I was just reading. This is from 2002. It says that you guys both did river trips that year. Keith for 25 days, and Nancy for 8. And then you guys did you hiked down. I don't know. Did you hike down to Havasu Creek, or that year? Do you remember? It said you were. Oh, you hiked to see the Majestic Falls. So you must have hiked down to Havasu.
Yeah.
That year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you guys do that very often, or just?
We went down. I went down once, and then Nancy actually got. A job offer.
Really?
She was looking for work, a job offer teaching at Havasu Pai, or at Supai, at the time, in the town of Supai, the little school there.
Mm-hmm.
As a special ed teacher. And that was one of the hikes we took. Anyway, we hiked down, and well, let me say, before that, we had gone down with some friends from the Unity Church.
Okay.
Camped in the campground, and we set everything down by a mule.
But you decided you didn't want to work down there?
Well, let me tell you the story. So we get down there, and they said, okay, well, the place you're going to live in, and they showed us the place that had absolutely no furniture, and they weren't going to provide furniture. I think the funniest thing is they had she had to meet with the Supai school board, and they were like, one was wearing Bob Marley and the Wailers t-shirt, and you know, it was way different than school board up here,
right?
And
was this before, was she already employed?
No.
at
So what year was this?
This was early on then?
The 80s?
This is before, 80? Yeah.
That's
when she was looking for a job.
Oh, okay. Early on.
When would that be, 80s? Nancy?
Wait, she's trying to tell me. 86. 1986. Boy, it was pretty rough down there in 86, I know, because I hiked down there with Steve's son. I mean, it's always pretty rough down there, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that was before they really had... Was there a tourist hotel in 86 down there? There was?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
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 It would be hard to teach down there, I would think.
So you knew someone who was teaching there at that
did
time.
Did you?
Yeah, for several years.
Yeah.
And she loved it.
She did.
Yeah, but she loved isolated places, so...
But there were so much drugs and
A lot of trouble.
A lot of problems down
there. Most of her students have died in one accident or alcoholism or one other.
Sniffing paint, glue, and that was a big problem down there.
Sad stories.
Yeah.
So anyway, we've been down there several times that way, and then a bunch of times, of course, down the river at... where the creek flows in the river there.
Right. Okay.
So that 25-day river trip, was that a private trip or what?
Yeah, that was a private trip.
How did you get on that?
That was Brad Jones again. The name keeps coming up. It was him and Bob Tobby, and these are all people that would come down to Phantom and spend maybe a week or two, down at the bottom of the canyon, and sometimes had to be voted out. the rest of the employees would go, Tommy has been here for 2 months now, can we get rid of him?
So nobody much liked him, Tommy.
No, everybody did like him. He was a likable, very likable person, very friendly. He was full of jokes.
But he was the guy who possibly stole camera
equipment. Yeah, that's how
he left. Yeah.
But until then,
he was okay.
He was pretty well liked, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was just the way he disappeared.
Yeah.
So did you know everybody on that trip, or a bunch of strangers?
I don't know. I knew everybody.
Oh.
I mean, pretty much. I mean, and now here we go, names again. I can't remember their names, but a lot of people anyway that it was a private, it was a private trip, so we could spend 25 days there. Remember, I remember one of the last days, Hoppy made a sweat lodge, created a sweat lodge. It was down like National Canyon or something like that, you know, close to the bottom. And we used all the blankets and sleeping bags and stuff we could that wouldn't catch fire, and built this fire. Well, the fire, of course, is outside the sweat lodge, and you get rocks really hot, and then take the rocks and put them, you know, with giant tweezers, take the rocks and put them in a hole in the middle of your sweat lodge, and then pour water on the hot rocks, and that's how you get that.
And that was just something he did down at Phantom.
No, that's something we
he did on a river trip. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And did you have any visions or anything?
No. I had visions that I was going to die of fixation. Because, you know, I don't know, it just like was so intense that you couldn't even breathe.
Oh, yeah, I don't think I could handle that. That's just hot, sweaty, closed.
So that wore everybody out?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
And then the next day you had to do Lava Falls. So what was it like doing Lava Falls after you'd explore?
Well, no, National Canyon, isn't that way down below Lava Falls?
No, it's just up above.
Oh, well, I'm not thinking of the right canyon.
Well, maybe something else.
Yeah, I mean, it can be so claustrophobic, I would think, and you would be exhausted, right, the next day.
Well, of course you don't sleep in it or anything.
No,
just
then they're purifying.
Yeah.
Getting the toxins out.
Right, right.
You know, in this thing here, it says that in April of 2003, when you were working at Phantom Ranch, you had to hike 4 times in blizzard conditions to get to your job down there.
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
Oh, definitely. Definitely, yeah. I remember times when I'd start down the trail and, you know, I'd see people leaving, you know, before me, you know, they're going to hike down and it's snowing and the wind's blowing and stuff. And I'd get down to... maybe below Ua Point, maybe, you know, someplace in there, but around the trail, what's that called, where the trail, or straight down on both sides of the trail, not Ua Point, but,
Windy Ridge,
yeah. I get almost to Windy Ridge, and everybody, all the tourists that had started down ahead of me were all coming back. They were like, I'm not going any further. But I had to work down there, so.
Ooh, so you had to go hiking in the freezing wind and cold and snow.
Oh, man, I remember times on Windy Ridge when I pretty much, I had to squat way down and walk, you know, because the wind was just so intense that it would blow you off of the trail.
Wow.
And it's gotten cold, too, so.
Did you wear, like, crampons or anything on your feet?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Yeah, crampons.
And did you have special warm coat and special gear for that, or no?
No, not anything in particular special. I mean, of course, I was wearing wool shirt and wool, wool coat and.
Do they provide the rangers with inclement weather clothes?
No.
So you just have your regular uniform but if you need...
Well, yeah, but of course that's a whole different thing, you know. Of course with the Park Service, you get a certain allowance, uniform allowance, and every year. And when you're, if you've got plenty of, you know, socks and pants and shirts, you know, you can start, or you start getting heavy coats and gloves and that sort of
thing. So you're taking it out of your allowance.
Yeah, yeah.
As you've been there longer.
Acquire,
yeah.
Keep acquiring enough stuff to keep warm.
Okay. That's interesting.
And then Nancy's River trip, the 8-day, was that a motor trip, I assume? Who was that with?
Azra.
That was an Azra trip? Okay.
Azra. Did you know Roger Henderson from Azra? He was a river guide. Because I know you worked for Azra. But I don't know. He died young. Did you know Roger Henderson?
No.
He died in his early 50s of cancer, I think. But I thought maybe Nancy knew him just from... Well, you mainly took people down and brought them up, or...
Well, this was before they changed the rules. This was when all she had to do, but it was still...
Oh, she was meeting them at the rim.
She'd meet them when she'd meet them the night before at Motor Lodge, and then go over everything and et cetera, how to do it, and then she'd meet everybody at 5 a.m, wasn't it? In the summertime anyway, at the trailhead, and say, you know, okay, we got everybody, let everybody go that way.
So she'd just point in the right direction.
There.
And
yeah.
how did you get that job? Who did you know?
How did you get that job?
Susanna.
Who?
Suzanne. Hannah?
Who had it before she did, I guess.
Oh, a girl who had it before you?
Yes.
Okay. Here, let me see.
And she passed it on.
Say again.
Susanna.
Helen?
And that's the last name?
Rennie, yeah.
Say again.
And she passed it on.
I can't hear.
Helen Rennie. Oh.
Okay, go ahead. Say your last name again.
Gatlin.
Susanna Gatlin?
Yes.
Cat.
C-A-T.
Catlin?
L-I-N.
Okay.
Well, yeah, and it's only recently that, you know, guides have to escort people up or down the trail.
And that person, Susanna, who took over from Nancy, passed it on to Helen Rennie?
Yeah, yeah.
No. It goes the
Wait
other
a minute.
Way around.
Okay.
Susanna passed it on to Nancy.
Oh.
Nancy passed it on to
okay,
Helen
got it.
Rennie.
You passed it on.
Yes.
And Susanna passed it on to you.
Yes.
Okay, got it. Okay, that's good. So, I mean, it was people who knew each other and they knew that they do a good job. You probably have to be a people person, right?
And be willing to be up at 5 a.m.
Yeah,
and,
that too. Yeah. And it was a summer job, mainly?
No, it was, it was mostly, but it was a job that she could do and still work as a school teacher.
Say again?
April
through October. Okay. Yeah, so she could do this. And she'd do it before school?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my God, you'd be up and doing this and then go to school after?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
And then you have to be there in the evening to brief people.
I hope they paid you well. Well, you did get to do a river trip almost every year, right?
But then, in the summertime, of course, she could take our dog along with.
Oh, that's nice.
And to the trailhead, and of course keep a hold of the dog. But The one year she was, after the, she you know, sent them all down the trail, she just walked along, was walking along the rim with, out in front of the Bright Angel Lodge and all that stuff, with the dog, of course, on a leash, and the and they got out in front of the restaurant there, not the Bright Angel restaurant, but what is that other one called in the Bright Angel Lodge?
The Arizona Room.
The Arizona Room. Anyway, she got out in front of that and. And you know how the squirrels are just so brazen down there, you know, because of all the tourists feeding them. This squirrel jumped out right in front of the dog.
Oh no!
And the dog, of course, went straight for the, you know, for the squirrel who had tried to run, but the dog was way too fast for that.
Oh no! And Nancy's holding on.
Nancy's holding the leash, and the squirrel was headed for the rim,
and oh my God.
But Nancy, you know, held the dog, but the dog had already caught the squirrel and killed it.
Oh, oh!
And all of these tourists, foreign tourists, especially, come running out of the Arizona Room, screaming at Nancy for killing the wildlife.
Oh, so your dog liked to chase squirrels and other critters?
Well, any dog would, yeah.
And he lived in the woods, basically, right?
Right.
So.
Right.
Wow.
So did Nancy, did you have to deal with emergencies, like hiking emergencies if people fell or got heat stroke and things like that, or was that all up to the Park Service?
Say again? Oh, I'm having trouble hearing that. If somebody was hurt, you would escort them?
No, I would.
But you would...
So the Rangers might bring him up, and then Nancy was in charge after that, maybe?
No, she didn't have anything to do with
injured or...
No, that was all after people started down, and so I guess once you set foot on the trail, you were subject to the Park Service in there.
When they would come back out, did you ever have anybody that was in bad shape? Say again?
Most of them?
Oh, but you didn't have to deal with it?
No.
Yeah, because they probably never had hiked anything like that coming out.
Well, I remember, you know, I was, when I was a ranger down at Phantom Ranch, often there would be somebody on the trail, you know, when I was hiking down to work at Phantom Ranch as a ranger. I was wearing a uniform, and there was one time when I had only gone down, I'd gone past Uaw Point, and just beyond that, the trail makes a couple of switchbacks, and on one of the switchbacks was a woman who was supposedly hiking down to a river trip, and she was, you know, just completely, her legs were all giving her problems, and she was a mess, you know, she couldn't go any further.
And what do you do? What would you do in a case like that?
Well, I was just an interpreter, you know, so I was not
searching
trained
rescue.
I could issue Band-Aid. I had a, you know, I had a first aid kit with me. I could issue Band-Aids. I could probably, and I could do cardiac problems, and thank God I never had to, but, you know, I could do that sort of thing because I had a first aid kit, but I wasn't, you know, I wasn't the kind of guy that could issue, you know, could put, give a person morphine or something, you know, to...
Did you carry a radio pain. Or something?
Oh, definitely.
So you could call for help if
that's
they
what
were...
I did, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I call for help and just wait with them until... I mean, I remember in the red and white switchbacks coming around the corner, this guy, it was just sprawled across the trail.
Oh my gosh. Oh gosh.
Like, what is going on? What's that? I can't go any further. I'm like, yes, you have to go. You know, and finally I got him out of the sun anyway.
Oh my
into
gosh.
Into the shade, and gave him as much water as I could. And still have enough water to get down, but yeah, that was the kind of thing though that was happening with river companies. River companies were saying, "Oh yeah, just meet us down at Phantom Ranch," you know, like that was an easy thing to do. But it's not an easy thing to do. You have to be in at least good enough condition to walk downhill for 7.5 miles or 8.5 miles.
And is that why now Helen
escorts them
down? And does she work for multiple river companies?
I think mostly Azra.
It's mainly Azra.
So it used to be, years ago, river companies would just stop at Phantom Ranch and dump people off and say goodbye and good luck. And I think it was Azra that started going further downstream to Pipe Creek, where the river very first, you know, where the trail very first hits the
okay.
river, which saves you a good... in better part of a mile hiking
out from there
to Phantom Ranch. So you know, so I think Azra started that, and then other companies that followed that, just because, and that's for dropping people off, so that just saves you, you know, an extra part of the hike. And it's a little trickier because, you know, there's not a great beach there you can pull in, but it certainly saved some extra aggravation on the part of hikers. So
wow.
I'm pretty sure Azra started that.
But now Helen would be waiting for them down
well,
there?
Well, I don't know how far down she has to go. But
I think she needs an Indian Gardens.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so they have to still get up to Indian Gardens.
Right. And then
But they've got a river guide. You know, one of the guys that's been rowing the river hikes up with them.
Up to Indian Gardens?
Up to Indian Garden, yeah.
Oh, so that's different than when I was there.
They've always got somebody with them. So from the rim down, Helen is with them, and then from, you know, it wouldn't always be, but in general, you know, at Indian Garden, then they switch over, and Helen would hike up with the people who were hiking, but up, and the river guide would hike down with the people who were hiking down.
So when did all that start? With this accompanying?
That was like 2009, was it? Or
16, so not
16.
That long ago.
Yeah.
Okay, because I certainly don't remember anybody hiking with us.
But there were just too many problems, including serious medical problems.
Yeah.
And the Park Service ended up picking up the pieces.
Yeah, people
so.
Having heart attacks and heat stroke and...
Right.
Wow. Okay, so let me just see here. Now, if you have any questions, go ahead, but I've just been kind of following their notes along to kind of get ideas for, you know, what was going on, like that blizzard. That was pretty amazing to me. I didn't ever think that you'd have to hike down, but I guess if you live on the top and you're working down there.
I hiked many times in the snow.
Did you always have a hiking pole when you were hiking, or?
No.
Yeah, because in the early days, that wasn't common at all.
I still remember, I mean, it's magical too, you know,
So yeah. When did you first use a hiking pole? Do you remember that?
No, I don't. But what I was trying to say is, it's the canyon is so magical when there's a storm going on. Because, like, you can look across, maybe across one, you know, one of the, well, let's see, across over to Mather Point. You know, you're under Mather Point, you know, hiking up the Kaibab, but, or down anyway, but you could look across and watch snowstorms coming off the rim and
like the clouds.
Just, you know, and the way the clouds move around. And then, you know, sometimes you can hear the wind in the rock, you know, and,
really?
You know, it's fun to do, you know. I mean, it definitely wasn't what I would call a hardship.
You know, Helen has posted quite a lot of photos online of her hikes in bad weather, mm-hmm. and they're beautiful.
Yeah.
Really beautiful with the clouds and the, you know, maybe light snow, just really magical,
yeah.
Like you said, just the snow on the red rock is gorgeous. Yeah.
But you must have taken a few slips and slides on the ice, right?
Well, it doesn't tend to be that icy, really. I mean, the only thing that makes it icy is the mules.
Mm-hmm.
And in general, if it snowed since the mules were on it, the snow kind of gives it some
traction,
yeah.
Yeah, but they stamp it down and make it icy.
Yeah. It's just putting a lot of weight on it, and it turns it to ice. Yeah.
Did you used to worry when he had to go down there and you knew it was going to snow?
Yes.
I bet. I mean, it would be a worry that you'd fall over.
I remember too, hiking. Oh, go ahead.
Using the poles.
Yeah.
That's when she said she wanted. You started to use poles when hiking in the snow.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, that's good because at least you'd have one more thing. That same year, your dog impaled itself?
No.
I don't know. She was running and just hit a stick and it.
It was an agave. Or what was not agave, but a yucca. And she, you know, one of those long,
pokey,
you know, things that comes off of it. She just ran right into it, and it went right into her body, and I don't know how far back, but she backed out of it, and then was
bleeding.
Bleeding, of course, and was definitely injured. She kept laying down, and Nancy hadn't seen. And she was with Nancy, and the two of us. No. I was working.
So you were with this dog with a stick. Oh, Lord. It said you had to drive the dog to Flagstaff. What? Surgery.
Mm.
Yeah, because it had such a big hole in its chest, it sounds like.
It's like Sunday too, of course. So everything's closed. And.
Oh, my gosh.
And it survived?
Yeah. It said $400 later, their free pound puppy is doing fine. I can tell you that would be $1,400 today. You know, this was 20 years ago. Yep. So, let's see what time it is. It's over an hour, so I think we'll end it here, if that's okay. And we'll pick up in 2004. And except for any other good questions like you have that come into your brain about people, like that's good, just to kind of, like, one of the things we haven't really talked about is, you know, who else he worked with as when he was down there as an interpretive person. So we've hit a lot of the people from that he worked with early on, and Nancy's friends, but this, now she's all the school librarian at this point. You've finally gotten out of special ed in 2001, and she's in the library full time, and you're now hired full time. I guess it's considered a full time job when you became the interpretive ranger, right?
No.
Well,
I was a full time. It was a full time job then, but. I don't know if you remember last time. I think I mentioned that the powers that be on the South Rim didn't like me being
right.
hiking in the canyon.
Right.
You know, they thought it was way too dangerous. So, especially if I was in uniform. So, they did everything they could to keep me out of the canyon.
But
there's only 1 year when I got to work the whole summer in the canyon.
Oh, so they kept you on the top then?
They kept me on the top, but I was still a permanent ranger.
Okay.
It's just that they wouldn't even let me go down the... They didn't even like me going down the Cedar Ridge Trail. You know, down the Kaibab Cedar Ridge. They wouldn't let me do that.
We should talk a little bit about that next time.
Mm-hmm.
Want to do that?
Sure.
You're going to be around next week?
Sure.
Yeah, just that whole thing.
Sure.
Do you remember?
I'm going to turn this off.
The name